Okay, and welcome back. It is Monday, as most of you are more than aware of, wherever you are around the world. Some of you are in Tuesday already. There's a lot going on, and we have accrued several days' worth of information and developments over the weekend. The latest, what they're calling on CNN, key model is projecting the U.S. will lose about 134,000 during this coronavirus epidemic, pandemic. The White House has raised the daily death projection to 3,000 a day, as Dr. Henry Nyman did last week, and probably even before that. There are a lot of stories that are up there in headlines for you. I hope you'll share them, send them around. Just read the headlines if you don't have time for anything else. That will give you a pretty good thumbnail sketch of what's going on. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. Another week is at hand. How are you?
Okay, Jeff. I'm pretty good.
All right.
It's good to be back. Go ahead.
Yeah, crazy. Well, I went to the bank today, and the bank manager walked past me about 4 or 5 feet away and actually bent at the waist further away from me as she walked past. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So.
I didn't take it personally. Don't worry.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. And actually, it's not going around as far as it should, I think. And that's part of the reason for these revisions in the estimates. Actually, there were a couple revisions that came out today. And they were both dramatically to the upside and kind of caught the White House by surprise. And they denied one of any knowledge of it and hadn't been vetted. And even though it came from the CDC, and then the other one is the one they've been using, which had made, just a quick review. That one is out of Washington State, and they had initially said that if there wasn't any social distancing, that the number of deaths would go in the like 1.1 to 2.4 million. And with social distancing, if it was adhered to, then the number of deaths they projected would be between like 100 to 240,000.
Right.
And that's what was presented kind of when Trump kind of brought out his plan to, his 30-day plan to do social distancing to kind of cut the numbers down. And, then, that group up in Washington came up with a revised number and they brought it down to, 60,000. And, Trump got excited about that and said, he lowered it even more. He said, I think we can do even better than that. We can probably get it down to 50 to 60,000.
Re-election. And, oh, yeah.
And since he said that, when the death rate had already gotten above 40,000 mm-hmm. and has been going up at about 2,000 a day, it was pretty clear that the 50,000 he was talking about in these projections were through August. And since it was still April,
he can't do the simple
idea
math.
That it was only going to get to 50,000, it was already 40 something, and it would be at 50,000 in like 5 days. And indeed, it did. It got to 50,000 in 5 days, and then it went on up to 60,000. And then Trump started saying, well, instead of saying 50 to 60, he started switching it to 60 to 70. But even when he was switching it to 60 to 70, it really mm-hmm. wasn't going to be quick enough, because by the time he did that, it was pretty clear that by today or tomorrow, and now it's going to be tomorrow, we would be at 70,000. So it got to 60,000 last week, and it got to 69,000 today, and it's going up. It gets a little low over the weekend, but during the week it goes up about over 2,000 a day, and so it'll top 70,000 tomorrow. And so it's clear that Trump's second revision of 60 to 70 was going to happen in early May, not in August. And then the group in Washington, basically, first they raised their estimate up to 67,000, and then they get raised up to 74,000. And like mm-hmm. I say, it's gonna get to 74,000 in a couple of days, and it's not August. It's early May. So they went ahead and came up with a revised estimate, which, as you said, was 134,000 by the beginning of August. And on the CDC's COVID page, it had prominently featured this group and their projections on what the deaths were going to be. And when they came out with 134,000 today, guess what mm-hmm. happened? The link disappeared from CDC's page.
Funniest thing.
That's who they were using to do the projection. So they've been using them all along and displaying their graphs at the back in the day when they used to have daily press conferences, which.
But they weren't crediting. They weren't crediting CDC, were they? They were just putting them up.
They were crediting the group in Washington State, so they were crediting them. And so, I mean, they showed several. They said this is the one that seems to be doing real time adjustments, and that's mm-hmm. the one that they use. So, throughout this whole thing on the distancing, they just use this one group. And that was the group that was most prominent on the CDC's page. They mm-hmm. said this is the group that we're focused on. And as soon as they came up with the 134,000 and did a few interviews today, their link just disappeared. So they are persona non grata now as far as Trump's concerned, and as far as the CDC is concerned, I guess, because it came off of CDC's page. Now, the other projection was actually linked by the New York Times today, because they got mm-hmm. They got all the details, which they've also published, and that one shows it. Going up fairly dramatically over the summer. So it's starting out a little bit slow right now in May, and then it kind of takes off in June and July. Mm-hmm. And they show that going up to 3,000 deaths a day right now it's closer to 2,000. Actually, it's probably just a little under 2,000 when you include the weekends for the whole week. During the week, it gets above 2,000, but it's a little under 2,000. They have that going up to 3,000 deaths a day, and they've got the number of cases right now. I've mentioned that, you know, it's in the 25,000 a day range is how many new cases are identified. And they've got that going up to over 200,000 a day new cases.
As of when? As of when? When is this supposed to kick in?
That's what I said. It's supposed to start taking off in June and July and hit 200,000
a day
by August 1st. August 1st, which is summertime, which is
That's 3 million cases a month.
Yeah. That's what the projection is. And that's the one that they said, oh, we haven't seen that, and that hasn't been vetted, and da-da-da-da-da. But it's in, I sent you the link to the New York Times article, and all of these graphs are linked in that article. So there's a link to it, and it's like 7 or 8 pages that have a bunch of different projections and show the curves and the range. But that's not necessarily the highest it can go. I mean, that's kind of the middle part. So the higher part is significantly higher than 200,000 cases a day. And they interviewed the guy from the Washington group, and they say, well, what was the impetus for this revision, other than the fact that, you know, the other projections are obviously too low because they're all, you know, the latest one before this one was 74,000. And like I said, the 69 and it's going up 2,000 a day. So it's going to, you know, by the end of this week, 74,000 will be history. And he said that it was, because the various states are kind of opening things up, and none of those states that are opening things up met the criteria the CDC had said they wanted to see a downward direction in the number of new cases for 2 weeks. And all of these states that announced the loosening of restrictions, none of them met that criteria. They're essentially saying that these numbers are going to start going up. And this is what their projection is based upon the current status, you know, based upon what's already loosened and what's been announced to be loosened. And if there's further loosening, which is certainly possible because all these states haven't weighed in yet, that they'll revise the numbers even higher. So what they're saying on August 1st is kind of if things remain where they are today, but if they loosen things further, then the numbers will go even higher. And then they
three million cases a month as of August, if these projections are correct. Maybe 4 million cases in September, maybe 4.5, 5 in October, and there's your fall second wave.
Right.
Tsunami.
But at this rate, it's kind of a expansion of the first wave, because usually you distinguish the waves because they go up and they come down.
Yeah, seasonal.
And it's not clear that the first wave is going to come down before the fall. I mean, they actually, the one that's at the New York Times has is steadily rising through June and July. So when it hits this 200,000 a day, it's not where it plateaus. That's just the end of the analysis, not the end of the virus, and it's not the end of the rise of the virus. And it looked pretty ominous, and that's part of the reason that the one projection on the CDC page has disappeared, and the ones that the New York Times listed have been disavowed as being mm-hmm. not vetted. So neither of these is really lending a whole lot of support to the the announcements. I think Pence said that, this should be behind us by Memorial Day, which is the end of this month. And Kirshner, I think, said it was going to be all behind us by June, I guess, or something like that.
Everything will be fine by June. That's what Jerry said. Yeah.
Right. And those are the only ones that are saying it. Those comments are based on data.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, uh-huh. they're contradicted by all of the data. So there's nobody saying, oh, it looks like it's going to be gone in 4 weeks, 3 weeks. We'll be good to go. So anyway, that was kind of one of the major developments. And then there were a few other developments. It turns out there was an MMWR. Actually, I think I got to send you the link. I've been swamped today. But a early release MMWR came out Friday. And it kind of went unnoticed because in the past, the CDC would usually do hold a presser when those were coming out and then would answer questions. And they don't do pressers anymore. So
nope.
It went up pretty much unannounced. And what that one did is it kind of documented when all of these cases came from Europe to the United States. And, they talked about all the flights that came into the United States from Italy in February. And that's when the virus would have been coming in here that essentially populated the East Coast. And so they pretty much acknowledged that there was kind of an Italian strain, which is what I've been saying for a while now. The Italian strain is the same as the G-clade because it has that one change in the spike protein, and the D changes to a G. So they call it the G-clade because of the new amino acid and the mutation. Now Cuomo's starting to talk about a different strain and, the more virulent strain. And now that word's kind of getting out.
Is he just catching on to the Italian strain, or is he going beyond that and saying, there may be a mutation to the Italian strain? What's he saying?
No, he's saying that that's what hit New York. He's essentially saying that that when the U.S. was looking at China and just screening people from China,
uh-huh.
that the virus that's in New York City and causing all the problems, I don't think he said Italian. He said it came from Europe. He said it was a European strain. He said he indicated it was a different strain. And then when that came out, then discussion started saying, well, is the vaccine going to work on the second strain? And where is the second strain? And how does the second strain mm-hmm. compare to the first strain? And so the general media is starting to catch on to the fact that there are a couple of different versions of the virus. And that may be having a significant effect. And as I said on Friday, there was a preprint that came out, I think Thursday night, defining this Italian strain that, they really focused on this mutation in the S protein. And they cited how it was becoming more common and it was mm-hmm. overtaking the existing strain. And there have been updates on that since last week. The several labs have released additional sequences. And it's kind of like many different locations now, especially if you look at collections that were done in late March or any time in April, that they're almost exclusively this Italian strain. And so Israel released a series today, and they're all the Italian strain. Russia released a large series last week, and I just tabulated them this morning and put that up. And for Russia, they're
right.
They're throughout the country. You know, it's not just in the European portion around Moscow and Leningrad or whatever it's called now.
St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg, right. So St. Petersburg and Moscow, they did one lab, did those, and then Vector Lab, that's the lab that did all the H5N1 studies back in 2005. So they did a whole series throughout Russia, and they're virtually all, I think they did 66 sequences, and I think 62 of them were the Italian strain. And so that's throughout Russia, and Russia's got some serious problems now. I think they had 10,000 new cases in one day, and now they're the fastest growing country in Europe. They kind of beat everybody out in Europe, and they Putin's concern now, and just we got a problem, and so it's spreading like wildfire there, and then I just noticed before we went on air that there were some sequences that were released this afternoon by a lab in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and usually they put the location in the name. So these said USA slash WI, and I figured these were all Wisconsin sequences. And I started looking at them, and they're all the Italian strain again. But it looks like they were sampling patients from counties near La Crosse, and they ended up doing counties in Minnesota and Iowa, northeast Iowa and southeast Minnesota, uh-huh. and there's some additional counties in Wisconsin. And like I say, they're all the Italian strain. And then one of the counties in Iowa, I took a look at the Iowa list, and they've got a major outbreak. And it looks like it's another meat processing plant. And they give a breakdown in Iowa on the age of the cases. And these were all kind of middle-aged. They were in their 30s and in their 40s.
Right.
And I looked at Blackhawk County, which is where Waterloo, Iowa is, and where that large Tyson's plant is. and they had the same age distribution. They had more cases than this one county in northeast Iowa, but most of the cases were in the 30 to 50-year-old range. They had a couple of different breakdowns there, and they were really concentrated. So I think that those are both plant processing. Well, I know Waterloo is processing plants. I had seen CDC had done a series, not a large series, I think it was seven or so sequences from Iowa, and those were all the Italian strain. The problem with the CDC is they weren't specific. They just said they were in Iowa, but it wasn't clear exactly where. But this one from the La Crosse lab broke it down. Each isolate said what county they were in, and there were a couple counties in northeast Iowa that they covered, and one of them in particular was listed. It stood out in the report from Iowa. So that's what the other concern is. The other concern is in addition to this easing of the social distancing issues, some of these areas are, in the past anyway, have fairly low numbers of cases, and they really didn't have much restrictions at all. And then on top of that, the processing plants were, the workers there were essential workers. So they, were obviously going to work and working in these close quarters and spreading the virus. So it's, apparently it's going not only from the processing plants, but back to the families and a lot of these workers.
Well, we talked about that many times, and it, of course it is, sure.
Yeah, but apparently they've got high density at home, so they've got 10 or 15 people living in the same residence.
Yeah. And so, big clusters.
And so right, so it's being big clusters there, and then they work at other facilities, and then it's spreading there.
Virus is good. Henry, talked about, we've been doing this stuff since January the 8th on this program with Henry Nyman, in case some of you don't know it. We've talked about this long, long ago. The virus is all over the place. It's going to burn its way through the entire population sooner or later. That's just what's going to happen. You're not going to get away from it indefinitely. It's going to get you at some point, and 80% of the people won't even notice. 50% of those, according to the last statistics I saw, will show no symptoms, and the other part of them will have some minor symptoms. And then the 20% will get sick, or some will get in real sick, and some will get in serious trouble, and some are going to die. But not so many. We just don't know yet. We're just too early. It's still, this thing is just getting started when you think about it.
Well, it's... It's not. I mean, there are 70,000 dead. And so those are in the books already, 69 are in the books.
Right.
And it's definitely, I mean, over the weekend, it slowed down a little bit on the deaths, but they always slow down on the weekend because I don't think several of these states don't seem to score them on Sunday. And so some of the reports.
Wasn't there an old
Sunday
movie about that? Wasn't there an old movie about that? Death Takes a Holiday? Just kidding. Sundays.
Yeah. Well, in any event, they do affect Monday's counts as well as Sunday's counts. So they tend to go down a little bit. But like today, there were, like I say, this is reduced a little bit because of a lot of the states today are reporting Sunday's numbers, but they had 21,762 today. Yesterday, which was Sunday, they had 25,766. Saturday was 29,227. So as far as new cases were concerned, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's still moving along at the 25,000 a day. And later, like tomorrow, in the next few days, it'll probably be getting up above 30,000. And that's in spite of the fact that the numbers are declining in both New York and New Jersey. So New York and New Jersey are well off their highs, and they're showing some declines. And in spite of those, which used to be number one and number two, in most states they are still number one and number two, but they're contributing about half of what they did at their peaks. There's still 25,000 to 30,000 cases a day, new cases, and these are going to translate into deaths in 3 or 4 weeks, and that's why the 74,000 deaths are going to be eclipsed this week, and it's going to keep going at this clip of a couple thousand a day for many weeks to come, because the number of new cases has been so high. And so it looks like it's not really diminishing. The idea that it was going to disappear in April is history. And
June
projections indicate, right, that it's not going to diminish in May, June, or July. And once you get to August, you know, I don't know what the schools are going to do, but I recall what happened with the swine flu. And swine flu, August 1st, was actually the start of school in
that's
many
right.
of the
in the east, south
in the
and
south,
east,
in
I
south,
think.
In the south.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
The east is
you got it.
Towards the end of August. End of August, most schools are starting, but in the South, they really start August 1st. And that's when the swine flu took off, because it was really in these southern schools that they had these major outbreaks in elementary and high schools. And I assume they still start on August 1st, but I don't know what they're doing. You know, they're going to have to be making plans fairly soon for, you know, pretty much they've all are going to remain closed for this school year. And, you know, they may be doing stuff online, but they're not going to be doing it in class education for the rest of this year. But exactly what they're doing next year is still a little bit up in the air. And like I say, if the schools in the South, you know, start on August 1st, and they kind of go back to even a, you know, a semi-normal situation, you know, the high school kids may not get that seriously ill, but they will certainly be vectors for carrying that back home and infecting older siblings, or affecting their parents or grandparents. And so that's why I say I'm not sure there's going to be a second wave in the fall. I think it's going to be a continuation of the first wave, because it's not, I mean, these new projections are not showing major dips over the summer.
One no, of you them, make a perfect point. You're correct. Nothing there.
Makes it, yeah. So that was kind of the news on the new case front. There's still more speculation. Trump seems to be doubling down on China and Wuhan Institute being responsible for the release of the virus. And he was asked what his evidence was, and he said he can't reveal that. It's another one of these, oh, yeah, I've seen a lot of evidence, but I can't tell you what it is.
And clever fellow he is.
And so, and that's getting conflated somewhat, because he isn't really coming out and saying that it was released from the Institute because there was some research program going on there for something, you know, like a bioweapons or even a vaccine type of research program. He's not saying that, and intelligence has come out and said that they've looked at the virus being modified, and there's no evidence that the virus was modified. But they said they couldn't rule out at this time that it was some type of accident from the lab, that they, you know, the one lab in particular Wuhan Institute does work on bats. And then there's another one, the Wuhan CDC, that also does collects bats and for coronaviruses, and they're actually located like two blocks from the
market,
from the seafood market, right? And so, excluding them it is a lot more difficult than excluding the manipulation. Because, well, like I said before, the virus isn't really clean enough to be a regular program. If you're going to do any type of program, you're going to clone the virus, and you're going to know what you're dealing with. And the various versions of this virus which have appeared would indicate that this was kind of a sample from the wild, because typically what happens is there's a major species, and then there's all these minor species. That's part of the reason they clone it. And so you have all these minor species that transfer from one host to the other, and then they kind of emerge as you go along, and that's where a lot of the mutations come from. They're already in the original sequence, but they just aren't amplified enough to see. And then as they're grown and pass from person to person, then the other ones start to appear. So the number of mutations that have appeared would indicate that it was kind of a, whatever the source was, it wasn't a clone source. And that's another argument that it wasn't a specific program if it got out. And it could have got out by just actually infecting a lab worker. And it could have been even a mild or asymptomatic infection.
And they took it home.
And so it would be very hard to trace it, you know, unless they actually isolated the virus in the lab and had a sequence for it. But, you know, there hasn't been any evidence of that.
No.
I mentioned that a second sequence came out about a week ago, but it wasn't from a lab in Wuhan. It was further north, but they had collected it. Down in southern China from a different cave that the Wuhan group used. But one was even closer to the pandemic strain. That was 97%.
Here's another look at this from the top of the political realm. This is from RT. In his rush to accuse Beijing of unleashing the scourge of COVID-19 on an unsuspecting world, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the coronavirus was man-made before making a U-turn without even blinking. He said, "The best experts so far seem to think it was man-made. I don't have reason to disbelieve them at this point." And then he went on from that to say things that were almost diametrically opposed. He Go ahead.
No, he did. I heard it.
Did he reverse himself? He said, "I don't believe," and then he said, "I do."
Within 10 seconds. Yeah, he said it was man, you know, he has evidence that it's man-made. And then the interviewer said, "Well, the intelligence agency said they've looked at it, and it definitely is not man-made." And he said, "Well, I have no reason not to believe them. No, I don't think it was man-made." I mean, he literally said it one sentence after the other. It wasn't. He said it one day one way and one day the next. As soon as he was challenged by saying it was man-made, he agreed with the intelligence agency, said that it definitely was not man-made.
And
they said exactly what I said. The intelligence agency has said that, you know, they've looked at the virus, the sequence, they've talked to scientists, there's no evidence of any manipulation of the virus, but they couldn't, they still can't distinguish between the two major other possibilities. One, that it was at a wet market, and the other was that it was an accident in the lab, that a lab had collected a virus, you know, it probably just collected samples from from bat caves and had brought it back, and that one way or another it got out of the lab, whether it was through the trash that wasn't disposed of properly, whether it was somebody got it on their shoe and walked out with it, or whether somebody actually got infected and got out of the lab that way. But one thing
that will help with this, maybe, if you, I don't know if any of you remember this, but President Xi, in his first appearance on this, said that, and it was very early on in his remarks, I watched them, there were subtitles. He said, one of the first things we're going to have to do is tighten up our policies and protocols at these labs, tighten security. That's all he said, but it was a suggestion that something might have gotten loose at a lab. And never since then has there been another remark about it.
Yeah.
You remember
and
that.
So I mean, there have been calls for an investigation. You know, that,
they won't,
that,
they won't know, allow it.
Right. And so I think Australia and Germany have said that, you know, there should be an independent investigation to figure out what the origin was. Because there have actually been a couple other pieces of information that said it wouldn't have exclusively come from that wet market. One was that there were several of the original 41, I think it might have been like 14 of them, that were not tied to the wet market. And then one of the cases that had been identified had developed symptoms, I think, at the beginning, like December 1st. So that person had developed symptoms before there was, you know, this supposed outbreak at the wet market. Well, I guess there was an outbreak, but the majority of the people that got infected at the wet market were significantly after this one early case. And then there's another report that indicates that the virus was in France as early as, I believe it was...
January. I thought he said the end of December, but at least January. Anyway.
No, this is in France, not in China. This is in France.
Right. They had it early January.
And they think. And that person had no travel history.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that there was community spread by January, which means it probably came there in December. And so in December.
Yeah.
Right. And then the case in China was like December 1st or so when they had symptoms. So I think they were infected in November. And so that case in China is the argument that it wasn't at the market, or, you know, the market might have created an outbreak, but that wasn't the only source of the virus was circulating prior to the market. Now, you could argue that it was in another animal in another market that didn't really spread that much. And so, you know, a couple people got infected and they were never really able to trace it because by the time they identified those people, it was late.
The origins of this and the timeline are just not in sync with reality so far. That these are real strong indicators that something else was going on. Oh, let's not forget that our president wasn't briefed by our intelligence departments until late in January. Wasn't that what he said yesterday?
Yeah,
he wasn't told about anything.
That's what he said, but I mean, there was... January,
I'm
there
joking.
Was a fair amount of information, right?
I
mean, the sequence was released, I think, right around the 8th. So, I mean, but by the time the full sequence came out, there was no doubt. I mean, it was a little bit fuzzy in December. In the middle of December is kind of when the outbreak was. And
right.
the cause of the outbreak was, you know, controversial. That, you know, the whistleblower said it was a coronavirus. And then, you know, the government said no, and they basically made him, you know, sign a confession that he, you know, wasn't telling the truth or something along those lines. And so they tried to suppress it. But the end of December, it came out that they already had a partial sequence and it was a coronavirus, although they initially said it wasn't that close to SARS. And then when the sequence came out, it was closer to SARS than it was anything else. And so, it might have been only 70-80%, but like I said, that was the closest. So by January 8th or so, the full sequence, I think, had already been released. And so there was no doubt that it was SARS related and that it had infected, you know, at least, I think by then they had it up to 59 and they cut it back to 41 once they had a PCR test. So that part was all very clear in January to anybody that would listen or pay attention. Now, I don't know that Trump fell into either of those categories in January. He certainly wasn't paying a whole lot of attention in February.
The word is that Intel briefings gave him the word at the very first part of January. Some say January 1st. But he didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't register with him, apparently, until the later part of the month. That's what he's trying to say. Here's a quick question here from one of our listeners. And we only have 3 minutes left. With the increase in positive cases that are asymptomatic carriers of the virus, could this possibly indicate the decreasing half-life characteristics, i.e., a weakening of the virus, as previously hypothesized by some others? Is this in any way encouraging that the virus is weakening? It didn't seem like it to me.
No. Yeah. The reason is that the virus has always had this issue with asymptomatic. It was just a matter of what you're going to look for. China didn't really focus on the asymptomatic cases. They mostly focused on families, and that's where they found the virus the most. They knew there was human-to-human transmission, and that they mostly zeroed in on family clusters. And so they were doing contact tracing and looking at family members, but they were generally looking at symptomatic family members. So they really weren't testing everybody to see if the virus was in asymptomatic. They were really focused on the symptomatic. And that was kind of extension of what happened with SARS. I mean, with SARS, which was, you know, 17 years ago, they didn't look at anybody that didn't meet the case definition. And the case definition for SARS was not that you had symptoms, but you actually had pneumonia. So they really zeroed in on patients that were clinically SARS cases. And, you know, the S in SARS stands for severe. So that's essentially who they were looking at. And so they weren't paying a whole lot of attention to the asymptomatic. The asymptomatic became more of a focus when the virus was still largely contained in China, but they started getting travelers outside of China that tested positive. And then when that happened, there was a lot of contact tracing, and they went and tested contacts, even if they didn't show symptoms. And that's when they identified asymptomatic. So asymptomatic were identified. If you remember, there was a one cluster that that went to Germany, and she was asymptomatic. She was based in Shanghai, and then the employees at the auto parts place in Germany were positive, but they were positive because they were contacts. They really weren't symptomatic, so they were asymptomatic. And they had the other one out of Singapore that went to France, and they went back to England, and he was also asymptomatic. So there was a lot of emphasis on the asymptomatic. The virus that's becoming dominant is exactly the opposite, is the Italian strain. The Italian strain, that there's like three different strains that are out there beyond the original one. And the Italian strain is clearly the most common one now. And a lot of different locations, especially in the United States, if you look at sequences that were collected in April or later, they're very dominated by this Italian strain. So it's really going the other way around. The more virulent strain is the one that's becoming much more common. And so but even with that strain, you can be asymptomatic. So it depends what you're looking for.
Okay, off and running, Henry. Thank you. We'll keep watching it, and it's going to leave. It's already three more major businesses in America filed for bankruptcy today. The economy has been really wrecked, and the damage is extraordinary. Talk to you tomorrow, Henry. Thank you very much, as always.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Very good. Take care. Okay, good night.
Dr. Henry Nyman. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll continue to... these are conversations as much as anything else. We're not here to try to make formal presentations. We're discussing the news flow and the information and the statistics as they come to pass and trying to pull them into clarity for you. Okay, thanks for being here. We'll be right back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours.